Hey, it's time for the adventure to begin as we take a look at Islands of Adventure. From the Bob Varley Studio, this is the Diz Unplugged Universal Edition. This is episode 23, the Diz Unplugged Universal Edition. The Diz Unplugged Universal Edition is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect universal vacation, whether you need round-trip transportation and tickets from Disney or a vacation package. Visit them on the web at www.dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Well, hello everyone and welcome to yet another episode of the Universal Edition of The Diz Unplugged. I, of course, am your host, Craig Williams, along with Jenny Lynn Knupp, Ryan Rhino Clavon, and back on the controls, our producer, Dustin West.
Only going slightly crazy back here, but I'm good.
Only slightly, yeah. We're trying out a bunch of new different things today, so we apologize for all that technical issues if you're trying to tune in live right at the start. We worked it all out, though, and of course we're here now, so it's all fine. I have to mention, if you can see, it's just the three of us and Dustin today. This is supposed to be a Julie Martin day where she's on, but she is at home with the flu. So we're sending her warm thoughts and maybe toast.
Get better, Julie.
Chicken noodle soup, I don't know. Something that really helps the stomach settle. That was probably too much information.
I feel like I should.
She's not going to be happy about that. Yeah. So let's hope she's just not watching or listening. But anyways, later on, we're going to be talking about Islands of Adventure, going through our 101 series. But before we get to all of that, we have to go through our housekeeping, corrections, omissions, questions, and everything else. So I'm going to start off talking about contributing to the Universal portion of the Diz. We are still looking for contributors. We've had a couple post articles recently, one about Give Kids the World that we even talked about on the show last week. And then we had one other one go up about the best and worst package suites of the Wizarding World. It was a good article.
That's clearly actually would be worth reading.
Yeah. Well, they're all worth reading. thank you for belittling the work that I do and trying to get contributors to help with. But
Craig, no, they're, you know, they're very good.
Craig, you know I print and frame all of your articles.
Look at this suck-up over on the other side of the table.
I have the Craig room at my house.
The sweetest,
you too?
Most creepiest thing I've ever heard, but I appreciate that. They're really good articles, except for the ones that aren't so good. Those are bad. But yeah, anyone who wants to contribute, you can go ahead and sign up. There will be a link to that in the show notes page, and you can get to the show notes page at disunplug.com. Then you find the little universal blue icon, and if you click on that, that'll show all of our shows, including the most recent one, and the links will be in there for that. So sign up if you have anything to say about Universal, and maybe you'll get published and you'll get money for it. It all works. Also wanted to let everyone know that we are now also on Stitcher, if that's how you listen to your podcasts. I don't know who actually listens to it that way, but
do you pray tell, what is Stitcher?
Yeah, I've never heard of that till this moment.
Stitcher is like a podcast radio app that I guess all of the other shows that we have are already on, and so now we're on it too.
We're joining the herd.
Yeah, so now if I mean, it's an app and everything.
Everybody's
and
doing it.
I never knew about it, but we're on there, so if you want to listen to us through Stitcher, you can listen to us through Stitcher. And then, of course, on youtube.com/WDWinfo and through iTunes, Diz Unplugged Universal Edition, all those ways. Just figure out a way to get to us. And then once you do listen, comment, like, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, email, we've got all those different pages. Do whatever you want. Just go crazy. We might even answer. We might even say something on the show if you take the time to say anything to us. Sometimes, maybe. I don't know. Maybe. We'll see.
I love the certainty we have here.
There's no certainty today. The fact that this day happened is just good on its own.
It's a miracle.
Yeah.
It's really a miracle of science.
Yeah. And
it really is.
The people who actually love us will know that we were up very late last night trying to get all of this to work. So, yeah, this is just a blessing that we're here today and everything's going down. But then because of that, some things have been delayed, like everything that Jenny Lynn and I covered during a celebration of Harry Potter. Nothing is still out there yet. You can go back on our social media channels and read about the weekend, but I've got a lot of videos and a blog, and next week we'll have a mini segment about that. And that it's all coming. It's just there's been no time since we've finished up. It's been a really
hectic
week.
I did some really cool live tweeting.
You did. Your tweeting was amazing. We added over 50 followers. I think we had, I want to say we had around 14,000 views total with all the tweets that went out that weekend. So
I got some of them, and I'm terrible at Twitter.
Go us.
Yeah.
Go us.
So good job.
Go you. Yeah. You're doing everything this time.
Grandpa here.
And then also this weekend is the start of Mardi Gras Universal. I think we didn't make any plans to go to this first one. I'll be there on Saturday night.
For Miss Newton-John?
For Ms. Newton-John. Mrs. maybe. I don't know what her relationship status is.
I like a good hyphenated last name, you know.
Yeah.
Are you bringing your roller skates? Because we know you love Xanadu.
You ready to get physical?
I'm probably going to bring a video camera. Maybe
at least leg warmers.
No, I'm just going to dress in normal clothing, but that starts and we'll start covering all that stuff and it'll be on a later show, but I'm not going to sit here and waste time with that. Whenever there's more pressing things, we'll jump into it. We got an email from someone about the show that we did last week.
Oh, cool.
I know. It is cool.
It is cool.
You don't get those emails.
No.
We get them. I'm excited.
Yeah. I got it.
Thanks.
We had, his name is Pete, I believe. Maybe Peter. I couldn't tell. He didn't have his name in his email address, so I had to just guess based on reading the email. But he wanted to chime in on our HHN discussion of what he would like to see. And he actually suggested A Conjuring House.
Oh,
right. Yeah.
I loved that movie.
As soon as I read that email, I thought, how did we miss that?
Yeah, it just didn't stick out to me. But of course, Conjuring was directed by James Wan, and he also did Insidious and Insidious 2, and he started up the whole Saw franchise. And Universal's did a Saw house years ago, and I believe 2 years ago out in Hollywood, they even did an Insidious house. Oh, where you see the actual house from the movie and you walk right in and then all the creepy stuff happens. So yeah, it'd be a perfect fit. I'm sure it's actually going to come in the future sometime. But appreciate Pete's chiming in on what he'd like to see. And
thanks, Pete.
Yeah, thanks, Pete, if that is your name. If it's not, then
that is
sorry.
Really your name.
You should have put your name.
Sandra.
And then also wanted to correct ourselves.
Never.
We talked about how exciting, I specifically brought it up, that it would be exciting to do a Jurassic Park house this year. And it turns out that they already did it long, long time ago.
Our point is still valid. Whether we knew that they had already done it or not, they should still do it.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to see the puppets with like velociraptors and stuff like that, but they did it a long time ago, back whenever
Craig
was a wee little
Craigling.
When
Craigling.
I was a wee lad of some years. And it was some strange mixture of man dinosaurs in the maze. And this was during the year that it was solely at Islands of Adventure, so I don't know a lot about it. If anyone else knows more about that, experienced it, wants to share your thoughts with us, let us know, because that would be helpful. I'd like to know a little bit more about
I'm
it.
I'm curious if there's any video. I don't know any
YouTube.
La.
Is there?
It's a video site on the internet.
Never heard of it. I'll have to check that out one time. I feel like they could find a lot of good stuff out there. And then just one other little one. Got an email just last night, I believe, from one of the friends of the show, Shane Grizzard.
I know Shane.
Red Hat Shane.
I'm good friends with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I worked with him at the Backlot Tour and Lights, Motors, Action, and he's cool.
I worked with him at Universal, too.
And, oh, you did?
Yep.
And, friend in common.
Yeah. I used to watch wrestling with him.
Oh, my, really?
We all know
okay.
him.
So we all know him.
I've got to just point it out there. I don't know who Shane is. So
you've probably met him at one point in time.
My Halloween party. Did you come to my Halloween party? This is irrelevant for the show.
It's irrelevant. So we kind of got off track there. But he chimed in on the 101 episode we did last week with all the talk about Dramamine and getting sick.
Oh, okay.
And it's something I completely forgot about. And he pointed out to us again that a lot of the attractions like Despicable Me and Terminator have stationary seating. So if you do get sick or you don't like to be put in that environment, you can ask and get stationary seating. So that way you're fine and you don't get as motion sick. And then in like the case of Despicable Me, I guess there's a height requirement there that I can't think of off the top of my head. I know there is.
Oh, I took a video of the minions all stacked on top of each other.
And so if your kid doesn't meet the height requirement, they can still apparently sit in the stationary seating with you. So it's a way, if your kids are too young to actually go on the ride or too short, they still have a way to do it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I appreciate, I didn't know the part about the height requirement work around on that. So thank you so much, Shane, for pointing that out. And then he also threw in on the HHN and he said, A Legends of the Hidden Temple House.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, no, it just, even if it had that same design and all it was the warriors or whatever they were that would pop out of the walls.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That would still be fun. It would be a nice like kind of goofy house whenever they try to do those
every
year.
Is this a boy thing?
Yeah, well, no, not, well, no, what it, not really.
What we're talking
Nickelodeon.
About.
It was like a game show on Nickelodeon in like the 90s.
Yeah, you've probably seen the t-shirts walking around the parks.
I was such a sad, I had such a sad childhood.
I don't have
cable
either, Jenny Lynn. So I made an effort though. Okay.
Whoa.
Well, this is depressing. So let's cut all that and
let's move along.
You know, let's move along and let's actually get on to the whole reason why we're here today. Islands of Adventure 101. Basic overview. Let's try not to get too in depth in anything.
Okay.
But of course, like we did for the Universal one, let's talk about the history because it had to start from somewhere. It didn't just
fell out of the sky.
There was
it didn't
no
just
big
fall out
bang.
Of the sky and open up one day. Yeah, I mean, there might have been, but we're not going to get into that one either. We're just going to keep checking off all these comments and stuff we're not going to talk about. So Islands of Adventure, announced back in 1993, the year of our Lord, 1993. And it was announced right along with the entertainment complex that they already had out in Hollywood called City Walk.
I think I might have heard of that before.
That's it. You may or may not have heard of that.
I might have even been there last night.
My GPS sometimes will try and give me directions to the City Walk in Hollywood, California. So it'll be like, if you drive straight, it's about 36 hours or something. And I was like, I live an exit down from this.
Well, that's very convenient. So Islands of Adventure was originally conceived as kind of a toonish type park where you're going to see characters coming from DC Comics. So that's your Batman realm and Warner's Brother cartoons. So yes,
I'm whispering Superman. I'm sorry.
We all heard you. You okay. could have whispered it louder. So the Warner Brothers cartoons, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, all those good guys. And then Dr. Seuss characters were also conceived for this. Of course, DC didn't really work out. And in replace of that, we got Marvel. And
I have a quick question about that real quick. So was I don't know if you know this, but was the... When they were planning Islands of Adventure, was this pre-DC being in, like, Six Flags theme parks? Or was that, like... I'm wondering if that was, like, they didn't work out with Universal and then they popped in somewhere else. If that's a...
Well, I mean, the Warner Brothers characters also ended up over at Six Flags. Yeah. So that could be very possible that it didn't work out with them because Six Flags beat them to the punch. I'm not sure. I didn't go that much into detail on it. So if anyone knows out there, throw it out to us. But... Yeah, so then also Warner Brothers cartoons never showed up, and instead we got I believe it's King Stewart's comics is kind of the overarching realm of all those Sunday funnies, but those ended up in there. In Toon Lagoon area, yes. And Jurassic Park came out in 1993, and it was kind of a big deal, I think.
A little bit.
Just kind of a big deal. And so all of a sudden that gets thrown in there as well, and then... There's always been some talk about it, but as the story goes, a bunch of Imagineers were upset with the development on Beastly Kingdom over at Animal Kingdom that never came to be. So all these Imagineers left Disney and came over to Universal, and then all of a sudden started forming all of these ideas that maybe they also borrowed from their time at Disney, and some of those ended up in the Lost Continent as well, rounding out the entire park.
That's why there's a dragon head on the entrance of Animal Kingdom, right? Because that was the original conceived.
Yeah, there's on the original Animal Kingdom logo, there's the dragon that used to be a part of it. And then on the way to Camp Minnie Mickey, there was that kind of dragon head statue that was kind of poking out, and that was supposed to be the whole area, but of course none of that ended up coming to be. And so the story goes, they went to Universal, and then eventually Dragon Challenge, or Dueling Dragons at the time, opened up and kind of had that. Dustin, did you know anything else more about that?
What about the fact that Camp Minimiki took over Beastly Kingdom?
Yeah.
All I know is now we're getting Avatar Land, and now we will have dragons.
We have something.
Large blue people.
So, all the pieces of the puzzle were in place. Construction and previews of the whole area started in 97. So you over at the Delancey Street Preview Center, that's now the Film Vault, you could kind of get a good look at what Islands of Adventure was forming up to be. And then around March of 1998, Universal Studios Florida, knowing that it was about to become a whole vacation destination, turned into Universal Studios Escape. Which I never had known that before.
No, I didn't either. Like, and I remember coming like the year that around that time, like we had talked about earlier in the show, like for the preview of, we didn't go in though, because my mom was like, I don't know what this is. I didn't do research, but I remember that. I just don't remember the name being changed at all.
It was that, and that was to preempt Islands of Adventure and City Walk and the Portofino Hotel coming. And then on May 28th, Island of 1999, Islands of Adventure officially opened up with all the lands we said, Port of Entry, Seuss Landing, Lost Continent, Jurassic Park, Toon Lagoon, Marvel Superhero Island, and it was not a hit right away from what I've read about in the Orlando Sentinel of 2000.
I'm surprised about that.
The reason being?
Well, the reason being is because way back yonder, whenever it was Universal Studios Escape, apparently people couldn't disassociate the fact that, you know, the whole area is called that now. So they just assumed that Universal Studios Florida added on this little expansion of Islands of Adventure. And so that's all it was. They thought it was an extra land. I mean, I've read that rumor several places all around, but that's what they said to blame. So they changed the name to Universal Orlando Resort, ditching the Escape. And then once people could associate there was Islands of Adventure, a full park, and then Universal Studios Florida, then attendance rose, and it was one of the only parks apparently that did well after 9/11.
It's the opposite problem they had with Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
Exactly. Everyone thought, and that's why I wanted to bring that up, because everyone thought Wizarding World, whenever it opened up, that it was a whole park. And then they get there and find out that it's just one little land on it. So, you know, I think the real thing is people just aren't doing enough research to figure out what is what.
Interesting thing that a name can do that.
The word world.
Yeah.
That kind of implies.
Well, you think its own separate Disney World. Name. You think like big, you know. Yeah.
Well, I think you guys are too blue sky about all of this. You need to take a step back and realize that not everything has to be large because it says world, you know.
Apparently not.
Ariel's world was not that large.
What are you talking about?
Well,
that's another show.
It is another show for another time, but let's get up to present day. Islands of Adventure, it's still around, believe it or not. And it also, from everything I've did research on, it hasn't changed a lot, except for the Wizarding World of Harry Potter expansion that happened in 2010.
And in some parts, you can tell.
Oh, yeah, there are some areas you can definitely tell. The Wizarding World was kind of wedged into the Lost Continent way at the end of the back. So before that part of Lost Continent was Merlin Wood. I didn't even know that Lost Continent had names before this for separate ones. So, you know, for me saying I'm a Universal expert, I guess I didn't know a lot. But Sinbad's Bazaar and the Lost City are still a part of the Lost Continent to this day. And we no longer have Merlin Wood. Whoa.
Sorry.
It's fine. If you're listening. Jenny Lynn sneezed, but you didn't hear it.
Silently.
It was amazing. So let's just jump right into the park. Port of Entry.
Wait a minute.
The first.
Do you want to start with the video first?
Oh! Okay, yeah. Rhino put together another video that I flat out told him that I would forget to mention on the show. So
for the second time.
Yeah, but that was awesome. So before anything else, go ahead and watch this video if you're listening. You will be able to see it on YouTube later, but let's roll it now. Wow. Well, thank you very much, Rhino. That was another great video. You're two for two, in my opinion, but I guess it only matters what other people think. But now let's start into it. You're going to find out really quickly that we actually went the opposite way. If you watched it in the video, it went from Marvel all the way around and ended at Seuss. We are going to go the complete opposite way for fun. So let's jump right in, though. Port of Entry. That's the one thing that's right. So Port of Entry is the first island you technically pass through in. Well, it's also the park entrance. And Port of Entry, of course, is if you've ever cruised before in your lifetime, you would know that whenever you come off of a cruise ship, that's kind of what Port of Entry is exactly like, just a mishmash of shopping and dining and gypsies.
That makes a lot more sense to me right now. I was always like, I mean, like, I get Port of Entry, like, I was like, oh, we walk in here, but I didn't know it was an island. But now that you're saying that, I was like, oh, this makes a lot more sense.
Well, and then if you even think about it, from the outside of the park looking in, Universal Studios has the globe and the arches, and that's, as we talked about with that park, that's their weenie drawing you in.
Oh, yeah.
However, Islands of Adventure, you know, you have that lighthouse, which is the Pharaoh's Lighthouse, supposedly based on the Pharaoh's Lighthouse of Alexandria, that is one of the eight wonders of the world. But I've seen, it doesn't look anything like it.
One of the things I wanted to point out, and I pointed it out in the, I believe it was the Universal 101, is that they put their weenies outside of the park.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. And I think that has something to do with their city walk approach to the way they're they outlined their parks is, you know, you're in City Walk. They want to draw you in. And yep. So instead of being down a main street where the castle is, it's outside in the front of the park. I think it's interesting and it's kind of cool.
Well, plus with Islands of Adventure, let's say you spend the entire day there. You see that whenever you're walking through City Walk in the morning and you're drawn right to it. And then at the end of the day, if you stay there all night, that lighthouse actually turns on and that light's moving at night. So let's say you're anywhere in the park, you should still be able to see that light spinning the entire time. So you always know where that entrance is, how to find your way back home if you ever get lost.
Such as Jenny Lynn does.
Which that's, once again, another thing on its own that we could talk about. So we get inside Port of Entry, and like I said before, it's a lot of shopping and dining. There actually isn't any attractions in Port of Entry anymore. Whenever it first opened up, there was the Island Skipper Tours, which was kind of a boat launch that took you across the lagoon, and it would take you and drop you off in Jurassic Park. But that ended around 2002.
Was that like where the Discovery Center? Is that why they have that big entrance at the, like, you know, when you go into Jurassic Park, there's like a Discovery Center and there's two floors of it. And the second floor, there's like this really nice entranceway that looks like the building from the movie, but it just, there's no traffic through there. And I guess that kind of makes sense. Yeah,
from what I understand, the boat launch in the Jurassic Park section was all the way down this path that is no longer really that visible anymore, because whenever Wizarding World construction happened, they built a bridge to go from Lost Continent to to Jurassic Park. And it was kind of back on the other side of there.
Okay.
But that was open up at one point in time. Like I said, it isn't anymore. So now you're just forced to walk all the way around if you want to get all the way back there. But and just in terms of the park in general, this is where you get the idea that it's kind of that hub and spoke style type park, like Magic Kingdom or Animal Kingdom, but there's no main centerpiece in the middle. Like, you don't have the castle and you can't just cross through and intersect. At Islands of Adventure, you have to walk all the way around in a big circle because there's just water right in the middle. But it's still really easy to navigate because of that. You can't get lost wondering where you are unless, once again, you are Jenny Lynn Knopp in this episode. So just real quick to mention the dining here, you have Croissant Moon Bakery, which is a bakery, Confisco Grill and Backwater Bar. So that is one of only two actual full-service dining venues in the park itself. And then the Backwater Bar is one of the bars that you can go to and relax during the middle of the day. And that's actually a cool bar because right beside the entrance to it is still one of the original sponsors of the park, Seagram's. And they have a nice little mural there that you can see. And if you're watching the video version, you'll see a picture of it. And if you're not, we'll have these pictures in the show notes or link to them in the show notes so you can see it. And then in Port of Entry, you'll also find the Starbucks, Cinnabon, and Arctic Express. So all different places to get your drink on. Shopping in the area, there's a lot of shopping too. There's DeFoto's Expedition Photography, which camera stuff. The Islands of Adventure Trading Company, basically their studio store. That's where you'll have a mix of absolutely everything you could ever want. Ocean Trader Market, that's got more gypsy stuff. It's very gypsy themed here. Port of Entry Christmas Shop, that is their Christmas shop, and it's actually wonderfully themed.
It is. Lots of Grinch stuff.
It's got the, yeah, it's got the Grinch and Max statue in there that I love.
No, it's great. Island Market and Export Candy Shop and Port Provisions round out the entire area. But overall, Port of Entry, even though it's just a walkthrough for most people, this is one of the most heavily themed areas of the park in itself.
I agree.
There is so much happening. If you walk through there at the end of the night when no one's really around, it's basically like a replica of Main Street USA, in that if you walk down Main Street at any of the Magic Kingdoms, you'll hear voices coming from the upstairs windows and all that. And the same thing happens there. You can hear conversations and lots of stuff going on. But, you know, whenever it's noisy in the middle of the day, a lot of times you don't hear this stuff. But Overall, you could take an hour walking through there, looking up at everything, checking out the windows. There's nods to Universal Creative, just like Disney does nods to Imagineering. It's almost like the Imagineers that left Disney to come to Universal Creative might have had a hand in Port of Entry and then another heavily themed area, Lost Continent, just based on how it's all set up so similarly to a Disney park.
I think Port of Entry is a good start into the park for the same reason you were saying. It's so heavily themed. Like, there's just so much to look at. The architecture is, like, really cool in there. And it's just, I feel about that about every land at Islands of Adventure, is that they didn't go, like, halfway in. They went, like, 150% into it. And they were like, make it over the top, whatever it is.
I agree. It has a really good feel of it. You know, giving the impression of being a living, breathing, you know, residential area with shopping and places to eat. And like you said, you hear the voices and the sounds just like you do on Main Street. And the theming is excellent. My kids actually enjoy being in this area just for photo opportunities. They have little things all around the place that you can get pictures with. And they just think that that's so much fun.
That's a great point. There is a lot of stuff like that. And no, it's awesome. I really urge people to actually take the time to walk through slowly, enjoy every aspect of it.
I think it really sets the tone for the entire park, and it does give you a sense of adventure. And the theming is so good that, I mean, I remember the first time I ever went there. Before I ever went to Universal, my impression was, well, I'm sure they're fun, but they're not as good as Disney, especially when it comes to theming. I walked into Islands of Adventure for the first time, took a look at Port of Entry, and thought I was wrong.
Wow, yeah. That's some beautiful insight. So we're going to take a right out of Port of Entry and head to Seuss Landing. Seuss Landing, if you can't figure it out, it brings to life all of Dr. Seuss's beloved books.
Yes.
Children's books, that is. And Seuss Landing is full of bright colors, curves, just really wacky. Well, bright colors is an understatement.
My one gripe about Seuss Landing is that it looks washed out. It's supposed to have bright colors, but it just looks like the sun's been a little bit too hard.
It's gone very pastel over the years.
Yeah, it's Easter colored now. Yeah.
But, I mean, you can still get the idea from it, but, they really took the time to make it as crazy as they could. All of the palm trees and stuff that you find in this area, they actually
shaved them into the Lorax tree shape, right? I saw some of those.
The palm trees they took from hurricane affected areas that were really bad, so that way they could bring them in and they'd already be curved like that. So
that's how they did that.
Yeah, they took a lot of time to really get the theming down pat in this place. But if anyone's grown up reading Dr. Seuss books, had them read to them, I think this is one of the best lands. And this is the kid-centric area of the park. Although there are many playgrounds throughout the entire park, this is the most that is just boom, put your kids here. They'll like it.
Well, it's still enjoyable for adults as well. I mean, they have that trolley in the sky. That's one of my favorite things to do. It's kind of like the Universal's answer to the Wedway People Mover. But Yeah, no, it's great. It's a little bit, my kids find it a little bit disturbing, but in general, Dr. Seuss himself is a little bit disturbing. So yeah. It captures that very effectively.
I mean, the themes, like basing it on Nazism and just a lot of that darker stuff, even though it's hidden in children's books, there's a lot of heavy, deep meaning in all of it. I mean, we all know Lorax and...
I just only knew about Horton Hears a Who being communist is all.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff. Definitely take the time to read more about Dr. Seuss and his issues.
But tell us what's there, Craig.
Well, what is there? Well, first off, as soon as you walk in on your left, you'll see If I Ran the Zoo. That is a kid's play area. And I don't ever go playing in there because that would just be a little weird, but I'm sure kids do love it. And then also you'll be able to see the Kara Seuss-L. And that, of course, is their carousel of the park that's got all sorts of fun Dr. Seuss-looking characters.
I think one of the things that's neat about this carousel is it has certain carousel animals have a little extra feature where you can move them while you're riding.
Oh.
You can make their eyes blink or their neck go back and forth.
That's
cool. Not every single one, but some of them.
And I believe no two are the exact same. They're all completely unique
carousel pieces? Unique,
yeah. Yeah. I believe. Don't take my word for it, but I do believe. And then kind of the signature attraction of the whole area is the Cat in the Hat. That is a dark ride that's actually a pretty hefty dark ride. So you think you're going to start off in this nice little fun Disney-ish type, but then you realize they're spinning and,
yeah.
Well, those things, Thing 1 and 2.
Thing 1 and Thing 2.
They're pretty crazy characters, and it's a really great ride. It takes you right through the story of... Dr. Seuss says the Cat in the Hat. I really got tripped up on that.
You know, it's just to be forewarned, the Cat in the Hat ride is definitely a family-friendly ride, but at the same time, it has a bit of a funhouse feeling aspect, to it. Yeah. So some kids may find it a little bit disturbing. Mine talked about questioning life as a result of being on that ride.
Right.
But...
I compare it to like the Winnie the Pooh ride seems a little trippy at Magic Kingdom, yeah. And I feel like this is on that level, but to a more extreme.
I would even say Mr. Toad kind of into that dark. Yeah.
A little more exciting vehicle movements.
But it's still a must-see attraction far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
The Stories You'll Hear is kind of a little production that they'll put on every now and then with some of the stories. And then, of course, there's meet and greet opportunities with the Grinch and other characters.
It's all tucked in the back by one fish, two fish.
And I will say on that note, this is one land that I always walk through and I always see like people dressed as who's there.
Yeah.
And like the movie, like the Grinch who's, so they have the nose come down and the makeup is fantastic for like... park meet and greet. I just think it's really cool.
One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. That is the spinning Dumbo-ish type attraction that I don't know what it's actually called in terms of that, but I've talked about it on this show many times. It's a lot more unique in that there's a song that goes along with it, and if you don't follow the instructions of the song, you are going to wind up soaking wet at the end of the ride.
Oh.
And the song's obnoxious. It's nightmares of listening to it over and over again, but no, you can't beat it. It's a wild, wet, good time. And then we already kind of mentioned it, the High in the Sky Seuss Trolley train ride.
The longest wait to get on that ride. It's just like, I don't know what it is, just slow dispatch or something like that. Cool ride, but just
very
cool.
I love that ride.
And of course it tells the story of the Sneetches. Some have star bellies and some don't. That's where the Nazism comes in.
Are there not two tracks?
There are two tracks.
Because I was like, I feel like I'm losing my mind. I know that I've been on it one time and it was about the Sneetches, and then I went on it another time and it was like about the alphabet or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I didn't
make that up.
When I was making that video, fun fact, I stood with my camera for 20 minutes pointed at one of the tracks that wasn't functioning that day.
They don't,
and I was like, man, this ride is slow.
They don't both function all the time, but Yeah, there are two different tracks that you can go on, so maybe always a different story. Maybe. And before it even opened up, apparently, from what I was reading, it was supposed to be Sylvester McMonkey McBean's very unusual driving machine.
Well, there you go.
But they had, it was just like almost you could control the speed that you were going, but on those same tracks, and it just never opened up, and it got High in the Sky came in 2006 and opened up as that, so... That's all the attractions. Like I said, a lot of kid-heavy attractions, but you can't assume your kids will be able to ride everything because High in the Sky does have a height requirement, as well as Cat in the Hat. So you have to be careful. But in terms of One Fish, Two Fish, and Carasuso, they're fine. Just to go over dining real fast, Green Eggs and Ham Cafe.
Which I always am trying to eat at, and it's been like a year and a half, and I feel like I'm never going to have green eggs and ham.
It's seasonal, so you'll catch it in summer and busier times, but they actually do serve a green eggs and ham sandwich. Circus McGurkus Cafe, Stupendous, which the High in the Sky Seuss Trolley train ride drives through there.
Yeah, it's cool.
It is the saddest restaurant. You never see anyone inside. It's
the food's not that great.
It's not that great. Like a lot of the dining at Islands of Adventure is not that great, but that's a different topic. Hop on Pop ice cream shop, mm-hmm. get your ice cream, Moose Juice and Goose Juice. My absolute favorite thing ever.
Favorite, yeah. It just disturbs me a little bit.
You got to say the Moose Goose or the Juice Goose.
Moose Goose, the Moose Juice or the Goose.
Ruining all up. But shopping in the area, you got Cats and Hats and Things, Mulberry's Street Store, Snookers and Snookers, Sweet Candy Cookers, and all the books you can read. Just, you know, it's all Seuss. It's very Seussy. But that's not a bad thing if you like Seuss.
Yep. So other than the fact that Mulberry Street is more like a muted, faded mauve at this point, it's a really great place to be.
Ooh, you guys know that mauve. Mulberry Street is where he grew up, right? In Massachusetts?
I didn't.
They have a Dr. Seuss museum that I went to last Christmas there.
Huh. Well, go check that out.
I used to live on Mulberry Street.
Is the Mulberry actually a mulberry?
No.
Okay. Well, then let's move into the Lost Continent. Because there's nothing else to say about that then. Lost Continent, of course, we've already mentioned it at the top of the show. Now it's made up of Lost City and Sinbad's Bazaar. No longer Merlin Wood, which was the home for the flying unicorn and dueling dragons. That's all in another section of the park now, I believe. But Lost Continent, you get your nice mythological / Arabian type sense. The theming's absolutely beautiful in the area. However, that's about as far as it goes, because then attraction wise you get Poseidon's Fury, which ended up on our So Bad It's Good list last year. But then every time I go back and think about that list, I rethink Poseidon's Fury being so bad it's good. It does have its hokey effects to it, and you're walking through this temple and the special effects are just amazing inside, but the acting is god awful.
I had the best actor yesterday. I was just going to say that was the one saving grace of the attraction. You apparently had a bad person.
No, I think the one saving grace is the mom from Arrested Development being the crazy evil witch lady in it right before you have to walk into the water tunnel.
I do love that water tunnel.
Buster, yeah, everyone loves the water tunnel.
Ellie was like, is this real, Mom? Is that real water that they're... How are they making that do that? I was like, I don't know. Keep walking.
It's an awesome aspect of the ride. I just wish I could have seen it when it opened and it was a big Zeus versus Poseidon epic battle and not so much needing the terrible character actors in there. Taylor, the name of your tour guide, right?
I loved Taylor. I just don't understand.
Yeah, they're all Taylor. It's a male-female name. It can work for anyone.
I understand. Like my Taylor was great.
It's like, Chris, grab my black Les Paul.
Exactly. And then also in that area, you have Mystic Fountain, which is still considered an attraction, but it's just a fountain that can magically talk to kids and then drench them in water if they get close. I know you said your kids love...
Ellie loves that one, too. She wanted to spend 15 minutes talking to that fountain yesterday.
Yeah, she knows that there's a person talking for it, right?
I'm not, Craig, I'm not sure.
You're not entirely sure. Okay, ruining the magic. Right behind the Mystic Fountain, you'll find Sinbad's, the Eighth Voyage of Sinbad's god-awful stunt show.
I haven't
seen it. But Craig wouldn't know because you haven't seen it.
I refuse to see it.
Oh.
It's not that I haven't seen it because I've been busy. I refuse to see it.
It is, you know, again, I'm sorry we keep referring to Disney, but it is Universal's answer to the Indiana Jones stunt show. Not quite as exciting, although the set is very impressive and they use all aspects of it. The stunts are pretty good, but it's just, you know, it's hokey.
Yeah.
You get very, depending on where you sit, you can get very wet when you're watching this show. Lots of exploding water.
You know what? Just so all the attractions have less of a wait time, I recommend everyone goes and sees the Eighth Voyage of Sinbad. And make that idea in mind up yourself in your head. Dining, the ever-touted mythos, is in the Lost Continent. And, you know, we've eaten there before. We had a good meal service there the last time we ate there. I don't know who in the room was actually with us for that.
I still haven't eaten there yet. I'm going to go.
It is the two of two in terms of full service restaurants in the park. And the prices aren't bad there, but make your own mind up about Mythos too. And then other quick service ones in the area, Fire Eater's Grill and Doxagru's Desert Kebab House. And a lot of Middle Eastern food in those types of places. So sometimes good.
Are we talking about dining good. Plan stuff during this show?
No.
Okay, I'll save it.
We'll talk about that on a separate one. And then shopping in the area, because there's no really merchandise based on these attractions or anything. It's, once again, kind of like Port of Entry, a lot of gypsy stuff. So Treasures of Poseidon, the Pearl Factory, the Coin Mint. You can historic actually, families.
Don't they have like palm reading there as well?
They do. That was the last one. Star yeah. Souls. I think they have reading.
Henna tattoos. Henna,
yeah, they you do. Can get like your coat of arms. You can get a sword or like a wizard holding a glass ball necklace.
Wizard.
And let's be
find
honest.
Your family crest.
No one actually cares about any of that stuff because anymore, the Lost Continent, if you're not at Mythos or Poseidon's Fury, that is a walking path to get to our next land, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, now labeled the Wizarding World of Harry Potter Hogsmeade for all of that promotional material. So that opened on June 18th, 2010, after years of construction and anticipation. Yeah, it's been there for a while now. It's aged, not in a bad way, though. So the Wizarding World of Harry Potter Hogsmeade consists of three main areas now. You have the Hogsmeade Station, which is where the Hogsworth Express is, taking people back and forth from there in Diagon Alley. And then you can walk into Hogsmeade Village, as seen in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, and then other movies on. And then the crowning achievement after all of it is Hogwarts Castle. But we'll start. We don't really need to talk about Hogwarts Express. We've talked about it before.
Yeah,
I think on the last show. I mean, it's the train that goes back and forth. If you don't know what the Hogwarts Express is at this point, you are living under a rock, I think. But
just so you know, it is a different... I don't know if we said it in the last show. I can't remember. But it's a different experience going from each park to park. To
yeah, it is.
I think we did talk about
that. I think it's better going from Hogsmeade to Diagon Alley.
I agree.
I prefer that one. Yeah. So I think that's actually a better experience to go across and then come right back. But moving in, the first thing you're going to see inside is Dragon Challenge. And that, of course, is the old Dueling Dragons. And this
it's okay,
is
Ryan.
Outdoor roller coaster.
It's fine.
Not my business.
Yep. It's an outdoor suspended, used to dual roller coaster that no longer moves at the same time for reasons that we don't need to talk about, but it's still a fun ride despite the fact that it does no longer dual.
It's got an awesome queue, and so if you don't want to do the ride, I still recommend you walk all the way through the queue, although it is the longest queue I've ever seen in my life.
But it does tell some of the story of Harry Potter. So
you got the Goblet of Fires in there, and it looks so cool.
And the car is crashed.
So. Yep, the Flying Ford Anglia, then you have the Triwizard Cup. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of stuff. It kind of ends after that. There's not much else to see. Back in the dueling days, there was always like skulls, and even Merlin was down in that queue. But it gets pretty boring after that. But it goes upside down five times on each side, no matter which one you ride. Chinese Fireball, Hungarian Horntail.
Chinese Fireball.
Ooh. You choose which one you like best.
Chinese Fireball.
If you're going on Dragon Challenge, as soon as you exit, you'll kind of run right into Ollivander's, which is technically a store, but
kind of an attraction.
It also is an attraction in itself, because if you choose to not just walk straight into the store, you can maybe be in a group that gets to go inside and have your wand chosen
for you.
So
is that still Ollivander's?
It's still Ollivander's. It is the Hogsmeade branch of it.
Okay.
You can still visit the original one, though, in Diagon Alley now. And people need to start taking more advantage of that, because Diagon Alley, you can get in and out in like 5 minutes, mm-hmm. because there's three or four
bigger,
different
right?
rooms.
Yeah.
It's so much bigger, but people are still waiting in hour lines over
at
Hogsmeade
for
some
reason.
It's a
cool show, but yeah, don't waste
time. If you have a one-park ticket, you're stuck
if
you're there that day, but that's another good reason why to get the two-park one. As you're making your way through, there'll be a stage set up that sometimes you'll be able to see the Frog Choir, and other times you'll see the Triwizard Spirit Rally, two little two little shows. The Frog Choir has students with the frogs.
This way comes.
They're awful singers. I'll just flat out say it. They're not great.
I hate when they like dubstep or whatever they're doing when they're like.
Yeah, they're straight out of Glee.
Beatboxing? Frog Choir.
Yeah,
yep.
Beatboxing.
Not dubstepping.
I don't think that's humanly possible.
Dubstepping sounds like computer motors.
Yeah, you gotta drop that. Triwizard Spirit Rally is the Beauxbatons and the Durmstrangs come out and they kind of do their little dances and stuff. They're cute little shows. Triwizard is better than Frog Choir. Put more money in that, I believe. If you have to
I
put money in
it. Cool. Yeah, the guys I understand this conversation at this point.
Do flips.
Really? Yeah. So I I did meet my resolution, everyone. I watched all the Harry Potter movies.
Yay.
Okay, that's done. Up at the top of the hill, Flight of the Hippogriff.
So many hand gestures.
Which used to be the Flying Unicorn way back in the day. It's a little kid's family-style roller coaster that you get to bow to a hippogriff, and you get to see Hagrid's hut from the queue line. So it's nothing amazing, but it's a cute little ride.
It's cute.
Yep. And, of course, the Attraction des Resistances. Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey inside my Hogwarts Castle.
Favorite. Maybe my favorite theme park attraction, period.
It is mine.
It's mine.
Unique. Just so awesome.
It is.
A must see.
So I'll briefly go through the story of it. You are there and inside the entire Wizarding World because Dumbledore has lifted the enchantment that now Muggles can run in freely. That was the original story when it opened up. And so you can go on a tour of Hogwarts where you'll learn about the history of Hogwarts. Mm. But then, of course, Harry, Ron, and Hermione kind of get you and want you to go see a Quidditch match. And then things ensue from there.
Oh, I just want to say the queue line is almost an attraction in itself.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
You do feel like you are walking through Hogwarts Castle. It's not just
the moving pictures are just
everything is incredible. Done perfectly.
And it technically can be an attraction in itself because if you don't want to do the ride, if you can't handle motion simulators, because it is a moving motion simulator, not like Spider-Man or Transformers, but it's on a giant KUKA robotic arm. So you're up about 15 feet in the air moving around on a bench. It's pretty intense. So if you just want to do a castle tour, just ask any of the students there and they'll be able to let you just walk through the queue without
still
riding.
Still worthwhile. But yeah. I mean, I would go as far to say as this attraction, Hogwarts Castle, Forbidden Journey thing, is worth the park ticket just by itself. Yeah. It's that good.
It's just unique. There's nothing like it because it's so immersive. Again, it's like the most immersive like ride I've been on. It's just amazing.
Yep. The attractions in the Wizarding World can't beat them. Dining in the area, there's butterbeer carts set up where you can get your hot, your cold, and now. Well, you can only get warm inside, but
you can get butterbeer.
Three broomsticks. You've got some. Not so authentic English fare there.
I will say, though, this is one of, in this park,
it's
actually, I think it's the only place I'll eat in Islands of Adventure because it's like, I really actually enjoy the food.
It's great quality food.
Yeah.
It's the only good quick service food in Islands of Adventure.
Yep. Sure beats Circus McGurkus.
Yep. Right next to Three Broomsticks, connected, is the Hog's Head Pub, and that's where you can go and get some English beers and some American beers, and it's really neat.
I recommend the Hog's Tea. It's like a Long Island iced tea, but since they don't sell soda in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, they do like a iced tea or something like that. It's real good.
I recommend the Hog's Head Ale.
Yep, it's another
very good.
Like the ones in Diagon Alley and in Springfield, they have their own unique Hogshead beer that is also made by a Florida beer company.
It's also another place where you can get butterbeer.
Exactly, with a shorter line usually. Yeah. Shopping in the area, there's tons. You've got Honey Dukes where you get all your candy and sweets and chocolate frogs. The Owlpost, it's where you can actually send a letter that's marked as coming from the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
A friend of mine sent me a letter like that. It was really cool.
That's cool.
Cute.
Yeah. Dervish and Bangs is right there too, and that's got more skull stuff, as well as Ollivanders, where you can get wands. And then up at the exit of Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey, you have Filch's Emporium of Confiscated Goods, and that's just more Harry Potter related merchandise. You can't escape it.
The merchandise, though, I feel like of Harry Potter is just it's top notch. Like it is, if you're going to spend some money on merchandise in this park, like save it for there because you can get anything and everything you can imagine Harry Potter related in there.
Yeah, and it's the stuff is all quality made,
yeah.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say enough good things about the Wizarding World. It's something that we talk about often because it is just the best.
Yeah.
But moving out of the Wizarding World, we'll go into Jurassic Park. And it's kind of based on the movie Jurassic Park.
Another fantastically themed area.
Yeah. Yep. And I kind of told you about it the other time whenever we were walking around there this past week. Jurassic Park is really unique in that all of the foliage and trees in the area are authentic to the Jurassic
I didn't
age.
Know this till you wrote it and the thing. And I thought that was a really cool. And as soon as you said that, like I was like, well, that explains it. Because when I step in there, I immediately am like, I'm in a jungle.
Yeah.
I'm, you know,
and
here.
It's 2,000 degrees hot because of all of the plants and areas.
Reminds me of Animal Kingdom.
Yeah.
Disney's Animal Kingdom.
But it's just, I mean, it is Jurassic Park whenever you walk through there. Mm-hmm. It's about as close as you can get to be without actually being on the set of it. And it's got so many things you'll recognize right out of Jurassic Park, like the Jurassic Park Discovery Center, which isn't quite like the main building in Jurassic Park, but that's
still
kind of their play on it.
Gives you the feel, yeah.
Yeah, the building is set up kind of similar. And then down below, once you walk into the Discovery Center, that's where they'll have some little things kids can run around on. And
plus, we have a T-Rex.
You do have a T-Rex, and
they have
the scientists walking around there with the eggs, and sometimes they'll be able to hatch the eggs and push all that good stuff.
Come on,
and that's where my favorite pun is in the entire park. They have one little section that's a quiz thing, and it says "You bet Jurassic." So I like that. And then for other attractions in the area.
Oh, never mind. I'll say this in a minute.
What's that?
I have something to say, but it's later. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Other attractions. Jurassic Park River Adventure. One of the best water rides in Islands of Adventure.
It puts knots in my stomach. The drop is much more intense, I think, than Splash Mountain.
It's in a different league than Splash Mountain.
It is just like... Eat the dinosaurs.
Exactly. When I went on this ride for the first time, I just got, the hair was standing up on end everywhere because it felt, even though the dinosaurs were a little bit like...
Some of them on the outside are a little...
Some of them are a little rough these days. But it still just gives you chills because you feel like, oh my gosh, this is it. I'm in Jurassic Park.
But for outside animatronics in all those Florida conditions that are all, some of them are submerged in water as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's held up very well over the years.
Also, Jungle Cruise is pretty good at doing that as well. And that's like really old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
now there's,
they should be able to do that too.
It's one of my favorite attractions
in
the whole place. And it usually doesn't have that long of a line unless it's a super, super hot and sunny day. But other attractions in the area, too. Camp Jurassic, which is a giant kids play area. I mean, there's so much stuff to run around on and fossils and jazz. Once again, it's another area that I don't usually go into because that would be weird. But that is also where you'll find the entrance to Pterodon Flyers, also known as P-Flyers. And that's a single rail roller coaster that, you've never been on it. And I have been on it because I've gone... to Islands of Adventure before with a kid that meets the height requirement because they have to be above 36 inches but below 52, I believe, is
like
the exact one.
McDonald's play place.
Well, it's a lot to do with the weight. There can be issues with birds flipping over, and don't want to get into that stuff if you have two heavy adults on it. I mean, heck, it might even fall down one day. Who knows what could happen? But... yeah, you have to be with a kid that's in the certain height range. It's a really small, cute ride, but it's got great views of the entire park. That's one of the best parts of it. And then in the past, there was also the Triceratops Discovery Trail. That opens up every couple years just for a very short time whenever it's really busy, and it hasn't been open for a while. Dining, you're going to have the Watering Hole, Burger Digs, Pizza Predatoria, Thunderfalls Terrace, once again, just all
and you
really standard bad theme
find
park.
Yeah, Chilean sea bass anywhere.
No, they did.
Park.
They did spare no expense. Did not spare.
They did not spare no expense.
Yeah, you'll find.
There we go.
You'll find a ton of food back in this section, but unfortunately, once again, there's just nothing that's really that good back there. Shopping is pretty pathetic too. You have Jurassic Park merchandise, but you can only find it in the Dino Store, which is part of the Discovery Center, and then Jurassic Park Outfitters, which is at the end of River Adventure. But, you know, Jurassic Park, it's great. It's beautiful, and it might be getting interrupted with Kong.
But, that's one of my favorite movies. I think one of the best movies ever made. And it is one of the few books in my life that I think I've read it 3 or 4 times. And, like, I'm going to read it again this summer. Like, it stands the test of time. It's a fun island.
Totally agree. All that, you know? Well, and the next one stands the test of time, Toon Lagoon, because I guess there's still cartoons in newspapers.
Sunday Funnies, I love it for that reason.
Yep, and that's why it's so colorful in there, because every day in Toon Lagoon is a Sunday. All the comics have come to life in bright, vivid color, and this one is bright and vivid as compared to the Dr. Seuss.
It's also extremely wet. If you're going to go to this land, you need to wear a bathing suit.
Step sideways wherever you go to.
Like, lagoon, hence water, because the attractions in this area are Dudley Do Right's Ripsaw Falls, and that is...
Riding in a bathtub.
Yeah, it's the Splash Mountain-style ride based off of Dudley Do Right that's... part of Rocky and Bullwinkle, and you just get absolutely soaking wet.
Yeah.
It's a great ride. And then you have Popeye and Bluto's Bill Dratt barges, and mm-hmm. that's a water raft ride. And once again, you go on it, you get completely soaking wet. Unlike a lot of these types of attractions, usually it's only one or two people that walk off not that wet instead of one or two people getting...
Well, I used to work at Cali River Rapids, and, you know, you'd have to be sitting in that magic seat to get wet. Otherwise, everybody else came out with a couple sprinkles of water, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. And then right connected to Bluto's is Me Ship the Olive. That's Popeye's ship. It's a playground-type area, and it's also got guns that you can shoot people with water that are riding on Popeye and Bluto's. So very, very, very water-centric there, but it's also just really fun. And everyone's grown up watching these, or not watching, sorry, reading mm-hmm. the Sunday Funnies and seeing all these characters. So even if it's something you don't remember, you still might be like, oh, that's my trip down memory lane, seeing that.
Yeah, it's even if it's generic, it's still, if it's become generic for you, you recognize it, you appreciate it. It's like the architecture, whimsical, yeah. It's great.
Dagwood Family Circus.
Well, and the gags that are in the area too. Like Family Circus, one of the big things was always they would do the line, the dotted line all the way around the comics to see where they started and where they end. And they even do that in this park too. So they take all those little touches that you see in them and you'll find it there. Dining, you have Wimpy's, which is never open anymore. Mm-hmm. It might one day. Blondie's, home of the Dagwood sandwich.
Yum.
I don't know what a Dagwood sandwich is. Is that from the comic book?
Yeah.
Is it look like that thing in the building?
Yeah. It's just a giant stack sandwich with all types of meats. But we learned no vegetarian/vegan options there.
No. Well, I mean, they did have a vegetarian option, but it just wasn't appealing. Basically, they were giving me a sandwich with lettuce and tomatoes.
Yeah. And then Kathy's Ice Cream, because everyone loves Kathy. Mm. And Comic Strip Cafe. That's your food court. Type dining restaurant for that area. Mm-hmm. Shopping, you have Gasoline Alley, the Betty Boop store, which Betty Boop will be standing out of there from time to time, and Toon Extra. So, and this just has a lot of random Universal merchandise in this area, but then also cartoon specific merchandise too. Some of the Popeye stuff is actually really cool if you take the time to look at it, but I guess that's if it's your cup of tea or not. But Toon Lagoon, great land. I like it. And that, last but not least, Marvel Superhero Island. So the story I know of Marvel Superhero Island might not be the correct one, but it's the one I was told, is that all of the Marvel Universe was on one giant asteroid that struck down into the ground and unleashed the entire Marvel Universe. And I believe I do have a picture, too, of the...
explosion?
Of the explosion area. If you've been in the park, you'll see random... It's like 5 or 6 yellow pillars that are shooting up out of the ground with kind of a cloud under.
Oh,
and,
that... I didn't know what that was.
From what I was told, that's where the explosion happened, and that's why you see all the characters coming out of there, and then they inhabited this entire island. May or may not be true, But that's what I've heard, at least. And the theming of the area is just Marvel comics. So you'll see all those characters that are from Marvel in their comic state, not their movie state, as they've become popular over the years. But then even like the stores and dining places, it just flat out will say like store. And that's how you know it's a store. And the comic book store just says comics.
Yeah.
So it's very, it's just like anything you would actually read right out of a comic book. And then one of the neatest parts of this whole area is that all the characters around were done by the same artist. I don't know his last name. His first name's Adam.
Stanley. Oh, no.
No, okay. The guy who illustrated the ones for the park.
Oh, okay.
His name's Adam. And he, since he couldn't sign anywhere on there, he hid his name in each one of the characters. So if you're making your way through there, take a look at the characters. I put in one that's of Captain America. You can see Adam on there, and he signed every one of those characters. So it's something fun to pass the time if you're sick of doing attractions.
And again, they have some really great meet and greets in this area.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They have the villains and the heroes, and they come out on these bikes. It's really cool.
Yeah, you'll see Doctor Doom, Captain America, Storm, the X-Men.
Wolverine.
Yeah, it's fun, and they do come out on those trikes, and it's kind of a little big show how it all happens. I wanted to update us all in the about can Marvel stay in Islands of Adventure forever?
It's always the big question.
That's always the big question. I was browsing around trying to find the answer, and I did find one courtesy of Yesterland.com, kind of a history website that's out there, pretty popular. And apparently Marvel can stay there forever, because when they did the original contracts with MCA, the only deal was as long as they upkeep and maintain the entire area and keep it relevant, then it will be there forever.
Well, and so like really these movies that have been coming out are just doing this park a service, because that's what makes it relevant. And
exactly.
I had read somewhere too that that's interesting, because I had read that it was at least 35 years. So it's interesting to know that like it's forever.
I read the contract too, because they had a picture of it on that site, and I couldn't see anything about time.
Oh.
Just that one clause in it.
Are they allowed to add to it, or is it just you have to keep it as is?
I don't know. Good question. Big attractions in the area. Arguably the second best attraction in the park.
I was just going to say.
The Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man.
This is my second favorite ever like theme park attraction I've been on.
I love this ride.
Yeah, it set the whole trend for Universal style of moving motion simulators. When this thing came out, everyone just raved about it. I mean, every Travel Channel special you'd watch back then, Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man, the best ride in the park. And it still holds up, especially once they updated the actual screens and took it into 4K high def.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. The story still is...
Still stands.
The queue is awesome. Yeah. I love it. Like, you walk through and it's kind of like... I don't know if it's intentionally black and white, but like the offices are all... It's just really cool.
Going
it's
through
just,
the Daily Bugle, and it's very comic-y.
Watch for the 8... or so Stan Lee cameos.
Yeah, there's a lot. Too.
Should be a drinking game. You'll be in the hospital by the time you're out of the ride.
You can't miss the next attraction, Dr. Doom's Fearfall. It's the two giant towers that, instead of like a normal drop ride taking you all the way up and then letting you plummet, does the opposite. It shoots you straight up, and then you kind of bob and bounce on your way down.
The scariest part is being shot up. Coming down, you just kind of float like a feather.
But I prefer it. I always hated being dropped, whereas I don't mind the shoot up.
Right.
So I can do this where I can't. I mean, I can do Tower of Terror, but I can't do like the big ones you see at Cedar Point or Six Flags where you're outside hoping you don't die.
Yeah, that's my.
It's not much of a free fall. It's more of like
theme park
a shooting.
Hope always.
But it's a fear fall. Sorry. Incredible Hulk roller coaster. The coaster you can hear from anywhere in the park, because
I love this roller coaster.
I mean, it's got one of the most dramatic lift hills, because it's not a lift hill. It shoots you out at 40 miles an hour into a loop, which then you go into three more right after that and end off the entire ride going upside down 7 times.
It's a long roller coaster.
It is.
Cool thing about the Hulk is that if even on busy days, it typically doesn't have that long of a line. It moves really quick. The only time you're really going to wait is if you want to wait for the front row.
Right. Yeah. And this thing roars no matter where you are, though, because they don't have any sand inside the actual rails. which that's what most normal roller coasters do to kind of dampen that sound. But this one, they took it out. So that's why it's just so loud and piercing no matter where you are. I mean, you can't have a conversation anywhere around this.
No,
right? Don't answer the phone right there.
It moves at such a speed. Like, my brain actually starts to feel a little bit like jello by the time the end of the ride is over.
It makes me dizzy. But for most people that love coasters, this is the best coaster in the park, maybe even Orlando. So that's high accolades. And then if you're done with Incredible Hulk, go ride Stormforce Accelatron, their teacup style ride that is slightly stormish.
I love it. I went on it yesterday with my kids. We had a great time. We thought it was better than the teacups. Don't tell Alice.
Fantastic. Dining in the area, you can't be let down with Captain America Diner or Cafe 4 based off of the Fantastic Four characters, or you can't be let down. It's all whatever you want to do. Shopping in the area, like we said, all the stores have pretty blank names, but you have a comic book shop, Oakley store, which is just kind of random that you can get Oakley's right in the middle.
Superheroes wear glasses. Come on, man.
Yep. Spider-Man has a shop. The Marvel Alterniverse store is there. And then it's not so much a shop, but the one arcade of the park is in this area, and it's Kingpin's Arcade, if you like to do it. But yeah, that's the entire park in general. So all the way around, huge park, amazing, a lot of stuff to see. And then just briefly talk about the seasonal events, because there's really not any. They have Grinchmas over at Seuss Landing.
It's a cute show. It's like the retelling of the story hybrid of the movie, I guess, because it's really the Grinch from the movie. And like, but it's a nice, like, it's
surprisingly
cool what they do.
Emotional.
Yeah.
And it's backed with the music of Mannheim Steamroller. And that, of course, is the Grinchmas show. And then there's also a breakfast with the Grinch that you can attend to that. And you can meet the movie Grinch as well as some of the Who's during this time too. But that's kind of the only thing that happens. I mean, the Horror Nights did happen twice in the past there. Once in only Islands of Adventure, and the other time a dual park one. But that's it in terms of that. It's nothing else. So
I'll say, like, as we went through this, what I found interesting is, like, I always associate this as, like, the thrill ride theme park, like, alternative to, like, Universal is a lot more, like, the themed adventure rides or something. And like, as we were talking about it, like, I really think Islands of Adventure caters to both sectors really well. Like, you've got your rides for the teens, adults, whatever, but then there's always a kids-friendly area.
I think it has better kids stuff than Universal Studios does.
Absolutely agree.
I think that Universal Studios, the kids, the Woody Woodpecker area was like an afterthought compared to this, which was built right into the park.
And it's nice, so you can, like, even out the day instead of having to be like, all right, now we have to sit here for 2 hours and, like, spend whatever time here. So that's just a nice, like, little note.
And I even think it's perfect for people who just like to wander the park looking around because there is such great theming everywhere.
Yeah.
But I think it's an absolute must do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to go to Universal, you might as well do both parks.
I mean, at this point, you should just, you should be doing the 2-park ticket, because you can't miss Diagon Alley, Harry Potter alone, you know, Spider-Man. Yeah.
Totally agree. But I think that's actually going to do it for this episode of the Diz Unplugged Universal Edition. So we'll be back next week with the buzz and our coverage of A Celebration of a Harry Potter. But until then, we will be back next time for another edition of the Universal Edition of the Diz Unplugged Universal Edition. How many more times can I say that?